there's no mountain too high, no river too wide. Sing out this song and I'll be there by your side.
Welcome back to Tivating Patiently, the appreciation podcast that highlights, dives deeper, and celebrates the work and accomplishments of our Tony-winning national treasure, Aaron Tveit. I'm Elizabeth, and a few years ago when I first started going down the rabbit hole on YouTube of Aaron Tveit's work and content, some of my favorite content to consume, and actually still is my favorite content to consume, are Aaron interviews. Aside from the new interviews that come out when Aaron is involved with a new project, I specifically enjoy rewatching Aaron's interviews with Paul Wontorek. Those two have such a fun dynamic and are clearly comfortable with each other, and that comfort level has only grown over the years. As time has gone on, they've done more interviews, and it's clear that Paul is always fangirling over Aaron when he goes to shows. Like, it's so fun to see. And Aaron has such a gift for telling stories and sharing his experiences, and he opens up so much more in interviews sometimes, specifically interviews that give him the freedom to do so and aren't just the press interviews for shows that have the same questions asked over and over by each interviewer. Any chance for Aaron to share his stories and his perspectives and his experiences over the years with performing are always incredible and contain so many little nuggets of memorable information. So for today's episode, I wanted to share a few favorite interview moments through the years, and full disclosure, most are from Aaron and Paul interviews, but there are a few that are from others. There's so many good ones to choose from, but I tried to narrow it down and pick moments that represent like time through the years. But I guess I'll start with a moment from Aaron's first interview with Paul in 2011. Anytime Aaron talks about his parents and their support over the years, the admiration and the gratitude that he has for them and all of that support is so clear. And in 2011, Paul said that Aaron seems like he really is a driven person, and he asked him where that work ethic comes from. And this is what Aaron said.
You seem very focused on what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think that's a very very safe thing to say.
Disciplined. Where does that come from?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it comes from, you know, being in elementary school and bringing home my straight A's to my parents, and then knowing that my friends got $15 for their straight A's. And I said, Mom and Dad, why don't I get money? And they say, no, you get straight A's or you get grounded. You don't get money when you get straight A's.
What did your parents do for a living when you were growing up?
My dad had a construction company with his two brothers. And so really the only job, I worked in a securities firm one summer when I was in a business program in high school. But my only other job besides acting was, you know, every summer and every winter break or anything, I just swung the hammer for my dad. So, you know, he's kind of a very blue-collar guy, and my mom's a special education teacher. She's a school teacher.
What do they think of all this?
They love it. They've been such huge supporters of me, and they're incredible. They're so proud, and they're a big reason, I think, that I'm here today, because I was a president of a business program that I had in high school, and I applied to about 4 schools for business and got a lot of scholarships to go to school for business. And then I also applied to a couple schools to be a voice major, and God bless them. They said, don't worry about the money, you know, we'll make it work. You know, where I think a lot of people would have said, no, you're going to these schools you got a scholarship for. What are you going to go study music for? So, and then even when I wanted to drop out of school to, you know, go do rent, they said, you know, go for it. You know, you'll figure out the rest when it goes, but you got to try it. So.
And personally, I connect to part of his response because growing up, I never earned money as a result of getting good grades. It was simply an expectation set by my parents, and I knew I needed to work hard and always put forth my best effort, and the good grades were the reward for that hard work, not a money amount. And that's carried over into other areas of my life as time has gone on. But for Aaron, it's so clear that his work ethic and drive is unmatched in his performances and what he's able to do. Like, whatever project he is attached to, that's his focus, and he does so much to ensure that he's able to be the best that he can be for his audiences and take care of himself. I mean, think about like his recent conversation that he just had with JoJo. Like he talked about like how he wore a Fitbit, like going in, like in rehearsals for Sweeney to figure out like calories burned and his heart rate so that he could then determine like his diet and what he needed to eat during the show to make sure he's always at like his peak, ready to be his best. And he did the same thing for Moulin Rouge. Like he's so in it. It's just so admirable and so special to like learn his process when he lets you in. And another Paul interview clip about Aaron's parents that I love is actually more of a story, but in 2014, Paul asked Aaron if he has ever had stage fright. And he shared that the worst case that he probably had was for his Broadway debut in Hairspray.
I think Hairspray, because it was my Broadway debut. I remember going to see my parents and a bunch of family were eating at a restaurant before the show. And I remember my mom, she was really concerned because I must have had been white. I went in just to see them and I think I was kind of zoned out. And she kind of pulled me aside and she said, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm okay." But I think that was probably the biggest stage fright I had, even though I had done the show for a year at that point on the road. But coming to New York and kind of doing it for the first time in New York, I think that was probably the scariest I ever was.
Right.
That debut night, he must have been holding everything together for so long that going to see his parents gave him like that safe space to like relax maybe and get that reassurance from his parents that it was all going to be fine. Like he had said, he had done the role of Link Larkin on tour before, but as we know, Broadway is a different beast. And whenever Aaron shares stories about that debut night, he still seems to like light up when he talks about how many people from his hometown showed up to support him. Now moving on to two more silly interview clips. And the first one is from a 2016 interview with Paul. And the interview covered so many topics, from favorite drinks to have when golfing, to Grease Live, to indie films Aaron was involved in, and Braindead. And in this interview, Aaron revealed that most interesting scene that he had ever been a part of.
There's a thing that people say, "Oh, what's the craziest scene you've ever shot?" And Mary Elizabeth Winstead and I would when we read the script and then we were shooting the scene, we kind of both said to each other, "Well, we now have an answer to what that is when people ask what's the craziest thing." I mean, honestly, we spent 8 hours this day doing this scene. Basically, what happens is she gets bugs in her brain, and you find out that drinking, eating bad food, things that kind of just make you feel things.
And sex with Aaron.
Having sex with Gareth Ritter, me, whatever. So you find out that that can kind of move these bugs around. So I get put in the position to do this. And so, but there were, while we're in bed, and also it was an interesting thing, standards and practices on CBS. Love you, CBS. It's a network show in primetime. And so we got things of that we were told on set, and this 3-page scene that we're having sex the whole time. But you guys, there can be no thrusting. There's no thrusting allowed.
So somebody comes up to you and says, "Don't, please, don't thrust."
There's no thrusting allowed
when we do this scene.
Like, you have to have sex, but there's no thrusting. And for instance, Mary Elizabeth had to go into ADR for the scene where she had to have sounds as if she was having an orgasm, but they couldn't be sexy sounds. Like, it's like how do you? So these are the parameters that we have to do this love scene, which is so awkward always anyway. And then while we're doing it, she's proceeding to eat salami and chocolate and hand me salami that I have to take a bite of. And it was, the salami was disgusting. And we would take a bite and then spit it into the prop guy's hand and he would leave and then continue the scene with the smell of, it was just.
What you've been through.
Yeah, you know, what we do for.
For the art.
For our art. But no.
That scene really is unlike anything else that Aaron has done before or since. And watching that interview, I love the disgust on his face as he describes the taste and the texture of the salami. Like, it looks gross when you're watching that episode. I can't imagine the taste. I mean, ugh. But Braindead as a whole, it's a show that is not for everybody. And I've talked to many people who have said that they cannot bring themselves to watch it, because the images of the bugs in the brain, they're just too much. And I'll admit, I watched the show once all the way through, but now if I want to watch it, I just skip to the Gareth and Laurel scenes, and their scenes are their own story, and their chemistry is just incredible to see. Another silly interview clip was from 2023 when Aaron was asked which Disney character he would be.
If I could play a Disney prince on Broadway, this one might be a little bit outside the box, but it would be Robin Hood, because Robin Hood is my favorite Disney movie. I can be a fox.
When that came out, I remember everyone collectively losing it when Aaron added in at the end the explanation that he could be a fox. Like, sir, of course you can. The next two favorite clips were from the Sweeney Tveit era, and both Aaron and Sutton shared in their interviews that Sweeney Todd was the hardest show and hardest score that they ever had to learn. There were so many moving parts during a given scene that the two of them had to develop their own methods for learning the score to ensure that they hit their marks and notes each and every night, which they did.
This is one of the most beautiful scores ever written. Like you said, it's your favorite musical. Like, is it a hard show to learn?
Yes. We were really lucky that we had kind of a whole, we had sessions over the course of a month before we started rehearsal that Alex Lacamoire took us through beat by beat of the score, because yeah, it's the hardest score I've ever learned. I mean, I don't know if this is a good thing or not, but I've never spent the hours that I spent on this kind of listening to the piano track of my part, following along in the score. I mean, it really took a lot of work to learn this, but I feel like it was like the artistic process in a nutshell. It's like, this is amazing. I can't do this. I'm terrible. I'll never do this. Oh, maybe I get it. Oh, okay. I understand it. Oh, I got it. Right. It's like, which is what you go through in every job, but this was like amplified. Learning this show was tremendously difficult. But then once you do, and it seems so complicated, but I think that's the brilliance of it, is that all of a sudden you start hearing the way that the songs work with the orchestra in a way that you couldn't imagine understanding when you start out. And I think that's the brilliance of the show and the score.
The score is
tremendously,
because you think, you're like, oh, I know Sweeney Todd. I'm like, oh, that's Sweeney Todd. Like, whatever notes I
created. Is there anything specific that was really hard to get right?
All the intervals, all the lyrics. Mrs. Love is chatty. Just that repetition of trying to just learn just the basics of the music.
I mean, there's a section in the final scene where we're both of us are singing our own individual melodies, and we're each in our own different time signatures.
With zero help from the orchestra.
And the orchestra is doing a completely different thing.
The orchestra is this amorphous thing. And I said, I don't know what the thing is. And I'm like, I don't know what to follow. And he goes, oh, we're following you. And I was like, but I don't know what to do. I don't know what it is. Like, so it was literally like me going, like clapping, trying to learn the rhythms so that I just wouldn't just
sing. You have to be rock solid, because
and then trust
if it doesn't, it just all falls apart. And I've been too
that's my biggest fear.
I've been too lucky. I've been in a lot of rock shows where there's always a drum set and a guitar telling you exactly where everything is. So this is not that.
It's they're like, listen for the chimes. I'm like, the chimes? Yeah. What? Or the harp, the harpist. I'm like, that's it? That's all I get?
Yeah.
Or there's like a weird amorphous thing, and then your note is like, it's crazy.
For this, I loved hearing from Sutton about the final scene for Mrs. Lovett's death, where she's singing one thing, Aaron was singing another, and the orchestra was doing something completely different. Like, I don't know about you, but being told to listen for the chimes when I was already stressing about learning a scene would push me over the edge. But not Aaron and Sutton. They made that scene a masterpiece. And Aaron's voice in those interviews, it's also different, like when he talks about learning the show, to me, because you can almost hear him like reliving the overwhelmingness that he felt when he was trying to learn it. And then in a text interview for Interview Magazine, Aaron talked about the Pretty Woman scene with the judge and how he remembered his timing for interjecting and adding his voice like after the judge finished. And he shared that he would use the shaving brush that he was like mixing the shaving cream to count 5 counts in his head. And when he hit 5, that was his turn to interject and sing. And I just love, love, love learning the behind the scenes process of like what goes into learning a role. Because as an audience member, we see the finished product of the characters, and being able to learn everything that went into the actors learning it, it just adds to like the lore and the admiration felt for Aaron and Sutton and what they brought to the show night after night for 12 weeks. And I also appreciated when Aaron said that learning Sweeney Todd was basically the artistic process in a nutshell. That Sweeney Tveit era was such a highlight of 2024, and I still love going back and listening to audios and viewing clips and photos from that time. It just added another layer to Aaron that we had not seen from him before. The final two clips that I'll talk about are, there's such a lesson in perspective and recognizing that everything really does happen for a reason, like even if we don't always get it at the time. And I didn't pull audio of this one, but when Aaron was on the Happy Sad Confused podcast, he spoke about the devastation that he felt when Catch Me If You Can closed in 2011. He's always said that he felt immense pressure to carry on that show as the lead, and he felt responsible in its closing. But he went on to share that the week after Catch Me If You Can closed, he got cast in the pilot of Graceland and got cast in Les Mis, and if Catch Me If You Can had kept going, he would not have been able to accept those roles. And that's so wild to me to think about. Like, even though I've heard him say that so many times, like, I'm crazy and I go back and listen to these things, like, I've heard him say it. It just seems impossible to imagine a world where Aaron is not Enjolras leading the revolution, or where he's not Special Agent Mikey Warren. Like, personally, they are two of my favorite roles that he's ever done. Like, so much so that I think it's going to be time for a Graceland rewatch soon, because it's been a while. And in that podcast interview, Aaron talked about timing and, like, everything. And even though it was heartbreaking for him that Catch Me If You Can closed, the closing opened up new doors for him that might not have been there otherwise. And the final clip that I'm going to share, it's also from a podcast when Aaron was on the Drama podcast, and he talked about what it was like to finally win his Tony Award.
It was exactly how it was supposed to happen for me, because it changed my whole perception of all of that. And then, of course, you know, cut to last year when it finally came all the way back around. It just made it even that much more amazing to me, because I think the thing too it's just a moment of really feeling seen by your community and by your peers, you know? And I think the thing that I struggled with the first two now at my age, looking back, was feeling really unseen. Mm. Right. And Catch Me If You Can also, right. It's like, I'm killing myself on stage for 3 hours every night. I'm here every day. Why don't you see me?
Yeah.
Right. Like, that was the thing I think that was the hard, that was the thing that was really hard at those times, is like, again, I didn't know that what it was, but now looking back and now having feeling what it felt feels like to be on the other side, which is just a complete feeling of being seen. Cause I just think I felt unseen at those times. But in hindsight, I think it was maybe the best thing that ever happened to you.
That clip to me is just such a prime example of self-reflection and perspective. Like, prior to Christian the Composer, Aaron originated those two Broadway roles in Next to Normal and Catch Me If You Can. He was on stage every night giving his absolute all, like he said, and he was receiving praise and positive feedback from his community. And then when it came time for the recognition, it didn't go in his favor. And like he said in that clip, like, he describes the Tonys as a way of being seen by his peers. And him sharing there that he felt unseen by the community that he so desperately wanted to be a part of was heartbreaking. And honestly, like, it could have been easy for Aaron to be like, screw it. If I'm not getting recognized, like, what's the point? For other people, that can be the option that they choose. But that's not who Aaron is. And performing and being a part of the Broadway community is who he is, and he has proven time and time again that he belongs there and he thrives there. And finally getting his Tony nomination and win for his role in Moulin Rouge, it gave Aaron that recognition and that acknowledgement, and he most certainly is seen and valued by his Broadway community and by so many fans, both here in the U.S. and, as we know, internationally. Like, Aaron has such a way with words, and in every interview that he's done, there's always a nugget or two that we can connect to, and that's like kind of like advice or something that really we can take with us into our own lives. And I definitely could have pulled so many more moments from interviews that stick out, but for now, those are my top favorites. And I just can't wait to hear what Aaron may share in future interviews, because we know he's like still just getting started. Like, there's so much left for him to do. But thank you so much for listening today and continuing to support this podcast. Please follow along on Instagram for more fun content at @tivating_patiently and over on TikTok at @tivatingpatiently, and hope to have you back here for episode 117.
I will love you.